We are broadcasting.
Thank you, Madam. This is Senator Boquist. I am the vice chair. The Senate Revenue and Finance Committee will come to order. We are going to take roll just to account for people, but we will be opening an informational hearing, which does not normally and does not under rules require a quorum. So if you'd be kind enough to call the roll so we have that for the record.
Senator Findley.
He is absent and excused.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner is present by Microsoft Teams.
Great. Vice Chair Boquist.
Vice Chair Boquist is present. And
Madam
for
Chair
the Bird. Record, the chair is going to be delayed and she is excused temporarily.
Thank you. Noted.
Again, colleagues, if you're just joining the members of the public, this is the Senate Revenue and Finance Committee. We do have a quorum and we have three bills we're going to do informational hearings on today. First one's 2458, the second one is 2507, and the third is 2693. As the agenda says, 2458 is the first one and it is the simplest, so we're going to open a public hearing on 2458. Chris, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2458 is this session's revenue revisers bill. As you may be aware, this is a bill that actually comes from Legislative Council. It consists of technical changes to statute. There's no substantive change. And this version might be the shortest one I've seen so far. It simply corrects a cross-reference to statute. And that cross-reference fix is on page 3, lines 22 and 23, and it simply fixes where one part of statute references another part of statute. And that's the sum total of this year's revisers bill. And we do not have anybody signed up for the bill, and there is no fiscal and no revenue impacts.
Okay, colleagues, do any of the senators have questions, considering there's no public testimony beyond what Chris just provided? Senator Riley?
Nope.
Senator Wagner?
No, sir.
Well, that's good. I don't have any questions either. Unless there's something you would like to add, Chris, then I'm prepared to close the public hearing and informational on 2458. Anything to add?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The public hearing on 2458 is closed. I'm going to open a public hearing on 2507. And if Chris, you will lead off, and then we'll start with Representative Marsh, I believe, in her panel. But Chris, please lead off.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to hand this off to Jamie. She has a quick highlight description, and then we'll turn it over, as you indicated, to Rep. Marsh.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, this is Chair Boquist, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern, the Legislative Revenue Office, and this bill, House Bill 2507, does two things. It decouples Oregon's telephone assistance program from the federal version, which would allow the Oregon telephone assistance program to continue assisting low-income voice customers, and then it also just extends the sunset out to 2030 for this program.
Thank you, Madam. Representative Marsh, are you out there?
I am. Thank you, Chair Boquist. Chair Boquist, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. For the record, my name is Pam Marsh. I am the state representative for District 5, which is Southern Jackson County. Colleagues, it became clear during the pandemic, although we should have already known it, that low-income individuals and families are often forced to forego access to the internet simply because they can't afford it. Fortunately, qualifying customers of certain telecommunications companies, primarily companies providing landline services, can get monthly subsidies applicable to telephone or broadband bills through the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, or OTAP, sometimes referred to as Oregon's Lifeline Program. The Oregon legislature established OTAP as part of the Residential Service Protection Fund in 1987. For decades now, the Oregon Public Utility Commission has expertly managed OTAP and, for the purpose of streamlining assistance, has also handled verification processes for the federal Lifeline program. Lifeline and OTAP have and continue to work in concert with one another to furnish bill payment assistance to Oregonians in need. Last summer, recognizing how critical these services were for families during the pandemic, the state's emergency board allocated $3.5 million to temporarily increase the OTAP discount applied to a customer's bill. And in doing so, we discovered a couple of fixes needed in OTAP statutes. House Bill 2507 makes those changes. The first change would clarify the Public Utility Commission's authority to manage the program independent of the federal government to better meet the evolving communication needs of economically vulnerable Oregonians. One example of the need for clear PUC authority is the FCC's move toward a sole focus on broadband subsidies. Certainly, broadband is critical, but we also know that an awful lot of Oregonians still need help with their landline voice bills. House Bill 2507 ensures that we won't be subject to FCC dictates in the operation of our OTAP program. The second change in House Bill 2507 would simply extend the program's current sunset, now set at 2023, to 2030. Colleagues, House Bill 2507 proposes common sense fixes to a program that provides vital support to Oregonians. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. Happy to answer any questions, and I urge your support.
Thank you, Madam Representative. I don't see any hands raised, and I don't see any facial cues that indicate that there's some. And I believe you have a panel that you'd like to go first. Is that not correct, Representative Marsh?
Thank you, Chair Bocost. We do. We have some experts ready to talk to you more about the program. In the meantime, I'm on the House. The House is convened on the floor, so I may excuse myself and go back to those responsibilities, but I know that there are people here who can answer any questions you may have.
Yes, ma'am. Our condolences to the floor. So there you go. thank you with that. Chris, would you introduce the first panel, please?
The three people are Samuel Pastrick, John Cray, and Jenna Jones, with Samuel Pastrick next.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Samuel Pastrick. I'm the advocacy manager at Oregon Citizens Utility Board, or CUB. CUB represents the broad interests of both residential energy and telecommunications utility customers here in the state. I'm just here and pleased to testify in support of House Bill 2507. And frankly encourage the committee's swift movement towards passage. Representative March did an admirable job at explaining the contours of the bill. I might just reiterate a couple of points, particularly in light of the fact that John Cray from OPUC, who will testify after me, will give a pretty detailed explanation of the OTAP program. So really, again, I'll reiterate a couple of quick points that Representative Marsh had mentioned. And then really, I feel like my role here is to be available for questions to the extent committee members have them. As a CUB approached Representative Marsh with this bill concept, and we had worked with her and others on the proposed influx of CARES Act monies into the OTAP program that the representative had mentioned in her opening remarks. So again, just to quickly explain what the bill does, it's very simple. It really just is reflecting and acknowledging two, frankly, minor but critical changes to existing statute that governs the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, also known as OTAP, sometimes referred to as Oregon Lifeline. The first change, again, would simply clarify the Oregon Public Utility Commission's authority to manage the program independent of the federal government. And really the goal here, as Representative Marsh had said, is to just meet the evolving communication needs of Oregonians, particularly the most vulnerable, economically vulnerable Oregonians. The second change is also very simple. It would simply extend the current program sunset from 2023 out to 2030. I guess, and I'll just frankly wrap up my testimony here, wanting to be sensitive of everyone's time. Again, OTAP is the state's essentially the counterpart, the sibling program, perhaps you could say, to the federal Lifeline program. And again, what the program does is that it helps economically vulnerable low-income households pay for either their phone, so this could be traditional telephony, certain wireless options, as well as broadband internet access service. I think I'd add, and again, John from OPUC will speak here shortly, that the PUC has in Cubs' view, expertly managed this program for decades now. And a part of the reason, or at least I should say the primary reason that we were interested in allowing for this quote-unquote decoupling, separating the state program from the federal program, is really in recognition of the Public Utility Commission's good management of the program, good management of ratepayer dollars. So I think I'll close my remarks just by saying that this is good public policy. It, in Cubs' view, really does meet the moment of the pandemic. Functionally, we're just talking about helping the folks who have been hit the hardest from the pandemic, certainly economically and from a public health perspective as well. So thank you for the time. Again, I'm available to answer any questions you folks might have. I'll stay on the line through Mr. Cray's testimony. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patrick. I don't see any hands up or facial expressions here. We'll move on to John Cray, if John wants to come on. There we are. Please go ahead.
I believe he's on mute.
You're still on mute. There you go. You're off mute now.
Thank you. I apologize. I had a PowerPoint presentation, and I hope that you have a copy of it. I'm going to go ahead and begin. So good afternoon, senators, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Cray, and I'm the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program Manager at the Public Utility Commission. In 1987, the Oregon Legislature adopted a policy that all citizens of the state have affordable and adequate residential telecommunication service. In 2019, the Oregon Legislature amended that policy to also support high-speed internet service. The Public Utility Commission, in response, created and administers the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, which is the state's counterpart to the Federal Communications Commission Lifeline Program. The Oregon Telephone Assistance Program provides eligible low-income households with a discount on phone or high-speed internet service through participating companies. The FCC provides $9.25, and the state of Oregon provides an additional $7. However, this December 2021, the FCC will eliminate the discount for phone service, which is currently $5.25, as part of its plan to transition the Federal Lifeline Program to only provide a discount on high-speed internet service. To qualify for the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, a household must either have an income that is at or below 135% of federal poverty guidelines, or participate in one of several qualifying assistance programs, such as Medicaid or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The Public Utility Commission is responsible for preventing households from receiving duplicate discounts, verifying initial and ongoing customer eligibility, and providing customer support. The program is limited to one per household consisting of either phone or high-speed internet service, but not both. In 2012, The FCC created the National Lifeline Accountability Database to prevent duplicates, but allowed the Public Utility Commission to opt out because of the Public Utility Commission's duplicate rate of 0.13% at the time. Next, on the PowerPoint slide, please. Okay, keep going, please. Okay, thank you. Okay. In 2016, the FCC created the National Verifier to take eligibility verification function out of the hands of the phone and high-speed internet service companies due to concern with waste, fraud, and abuse. This was not an issue in Oregon because it is the Public Utility Commission, not the company, that verifies eligibility. As a result, the FCC relies on the Public Utility Commission eligibility determination. Finally, the Public Utility Commission provides customer support at the state level. Otherwise, Oregonians would need to apply and seek assistance at the federal level. Next, please. A total of 30 landline and 6 wireless phone and high-speed internet service companies participate in the program, which currently supports 60,000 households. The participation rate is 10% and is measured by the total number of households receiving the discount compared to the total number of households receiving the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, as noted in the next slide. Okay. Next slide, please. Okay. Although the participation rate is 10%, there are several factors that influence it. First, not all phone or high-speed internet service companies participate. Second, the FCC and the Public Utility Commission adopted regulation to curb waste, fraud, and abuse when national duplicate rates were high and eligibility determination were in the hands of the companies. Third, the Public Utility Commission identified misconduct in which a company was claiming more customers than it should have for reimbursement. And as a result of that, the participation rate dropped from 15% to 10%, and the FCC levied a historic $200 million civil penalty against the company. Finally, the coronavirus pandemic has caused an economic downturn, and as a result, the number of households receiving the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits has increased sharply. While the total number of customers is gradually increasing, the participation rate has been in and will continue to be in flux. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview of the program. I welcome your questions and comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Correa. I am looking for hands from any of our colleagues. I thought I saw Senator Burdick come up, but I don't see that she's there now. Any other questions? If there's no questions, I believe we'll move on to the next witness, which is Jenna Jones.
I am here, Mr. Vice Chair, and you are doing such a great job. I would like you to continue, if you're willing.
I am perfectly fine moving on. You're on the screen now. You just keep flashing in and out. I would just point out that I had delegated to Senator Riley, should I vaporize on the screen, to assume an informational hearing as we move forward, just in case something goes wrong. Jenna, are you out there?
No, Mr. Chair.
I am.
Is there a question?
Yeah, sorry, it's just Senator Wagner.
Before we
pivot off this stream of comment here, I just wanted the Senator Burdick to know that Senator Riley was talking about maybe making Senator Boquist the permanent chair of the Revenue Committee. So,
well, based on my observation, I can see why he would have cause.
You'd be surprised about my corporate taxation position, Senator Wagner. I know where there's revenue. Again, Jenna, are you out there so we can proceed?
Vice Chair Boquist, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Please proceed.
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jenna Jones, representing the League of Oregon Cities here in support of House Bill 2507. Many know that affordability has been a barrier to access for traditional telephone service and broadband services and has contributed to the digital divide. Now, especially during the pandemic, is not the time to exacerbate the digital divide or take a tool out of the state's toolkit to connect Oregonians. As many as the other proponents have mentioned, OTAP, or the State Lifeline Program, has been thriving at the state level and has been doing, has seen an increase in need during the pandemic. The need for this critical program will not go away despite the changes happening at the federal level. The state must ensure that vulnerable residents in large and small communities across the state continue to have access to both telephone and broadband services. As you know, telephone service, traditional telephone, can last in natural disasters and things like that when broadband service might be down. For some who are medically vulnerable, their preferred method is to use a traditional telephone. And that's still, there is still a preference out there for telephone service. So while broadband is kind of booming right now, we can't lose both investments in traditional telephone and broadband. And for this reason, we really do support the decoupling of OTAP from the federal program. In short, I'll just say, good bill should pass. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I wish I had broadband because my bad network quality flashing light has just come on again. So we appreciate your testimony. Colleagues, do any of you have questions for Ms. Jones? If I see no questions, thank you very much, Ms. Jones. Chris, do you have anything you want to, you or the staff, in before we close the public hearing on 2507? I'm looking for Jamie, too.
Yeah, I'm giving Jamie a second to chime in here. That's all that I had, but I'm giving Jamie a second to chime in.
Vice Chair Boquist, I don't have anything to add, but I'm here to answer questions as well.
Well, thank you very much. If there's no questions from the other senators, we're going to close the public hearing on 2507, and we're going to open a public hearing on 2693. And if Chris, if you'd be kind enough to lead off or point to the right staff member.
That would be Jamie again, and I, yep, there she is.
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern from Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2693 would adjust the property tax exemption for apprenticeship property. This tax exemption program requires the property of the industry apprenticeship to be actually and exclusively occupied and used for the purposes of industry apprenticeship or training trust. Exception to the property tax exemption would allow a use of that property for no more than 7 consecutive days and no more than 30 calendar days in the year by a tax-exempt corporation, essentially allowing that in apprenticeship trust to lend out their property for use by a tax-exempt corporation for that short period of time.
Thank you, Jamie. Colleagues, any questions before we move to the witnesses? I don't see any flags up. First up, I have Lou Christensen. Are you there, Lou?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. There okay. You are. Coming up now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members of the Senate's Finance Committee, or Finance and Revenue Committee. My name is Lou Christian. I am business manager for Financial Secretary Treasurer for the United Association of Local 290, Plumber Steam Fitters, and HVAC Marine Fitters. And I represent currently over 4,600 members of our local, including 550 apprentices. We have training center facilities in Tualatin, Salem, Redmond, Springfield, Coos Bay, and White City in Oregon. These are owned and operated for the benefit of our 550-plus apprentices and our journeymen and women. These facilities are jointly managed through a labor management trust with our contractor partners, and they are made up of 50% our contractors, 50% our labor representatives, and together we manage the money that is deducted from our checks through negotiations to operate our training centers and apprenticeship programs. We currently have the four programs registered through the state apprenticeship system, and we do about 50,000 man hours of training a year. So it takes quite a bit of facilities located throughout our region to be able to accomplish this. Last summer, we were going to participate in a regional Portland area food distribution event for COVID impacted families and workers. And when we were looking to do this in Tualatin facility, so there would be one of these events on the southwest side of Portland to be easier accessed by working men and women. And we found out that we were not going to be able to do this because of a catch-22 situation. The issue that came up was the federal ERISA regulations that govern our trust federally say that the training trust can't give away any space or services that are not directly related or benefiting the apprentices or journeymen that contribute. And we would have to lease the facility to the local union, which I represent also, and we were willing to do that. But the problem was under ORS 307.580, the apprenticeship trust would lose their property tax exemption and would create a big financial burden because we would lose our tax exempt status for the whole facility. And the plan that was worked through after a consultation with our attorneys and lobbyists, and then working with Nancy Nathanson, House Representative Nathanson, and helped us navigate through the issues with Washington County to make sure that we were looking at this correctly. This was the product of that discussions, and this would allow us to be able to do these food events in our facilities, not be concerned with losing that tax exempt status that we have as training centers for our journeymen and apprentices. And to make this so that it was a very limited thing where it was not to be abused, the language has that it would be able to use these facilities on a limited basis by a 501c3, c4, c5, or c6 for a limited time period without losing these property tax exemptions. And it specifies no more than 7 consecutive days or 30 cumulative days in a property tax year, trying to make this very limited so that we can help our communities wherever we're at and not worry about the losing our tax exemption. And this, unfortunately, we weren't able to participate in that last summer. So this is the proposal to correct that so that we can be good members of our community and give back when there's times of need. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I've been in that facility. There's an area that's really good for doing what you're proposing to do there. So hopefully we can move forward. Committee members, questions? Thank you, Lou. With that, we're going to move on to Chris Carpenter.
I was just going to say, thank you so much. You know, just a brief comment, Lou. Thank you so much for bringing this forward. I know it was my constituent, and then also having the training center that's such an anchor of our community. Everything that you do on preparation for our crafts trades is just absolutely phenomenal. And the fact that you're doing this level of service, working to meet the needs of folks, especially in the middle of this pandemic, really appreciative. And I know I had an opportunity to talk to your advocates on this too, and just want to thank you for bringing the legislation forward.
You're on mute, Lou.
Thank you very much. That was a very kind, Senator Wagner.
Okay. You can put your hand down now, Senator Wagner. And with that, we'll move on to Chris Carpenter. You out there, Chris?
I'm here. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes, sir, we can.
Great. All right. Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Carpenter, here for the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association here in Oregon, and also UA Local 290. I'll try to keep this pretty brief. Lou covered it real well. He kind of went through the entire process here. We have kind of run the gamut on this one in terms of trying to figure out a solution. When 290 did want to do this event last summer again, we went through the county, we went through the Department of Revenue. We eventually had to, you know, realize that this was actually just a catch-22 that should be pretty easily fixed. I do just want to note, you know, it came over. We had a good hearing in the House, came out of committee unanimously, came off the floor 59-0. We had, you know, excellent remarks from our sponsor, Representative Witt, and also from Representative Daniel Bonham. So we're excited to hopefully be able to fix this issue and really hope that you can support the bill going forward. Thank you. And I'm happy to try to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. I don't see any hands up. I don't see any facial expressions. Jamie, do you have any other closing comments in regards to this bill?
No, I'm just here to answer questions. Thank you, Chair.
Colleagues, if there's no questions, then we're going to close the public hearing on 2693. I do want to remind all members of the public who have been watching on all three bills, 2458, 2507, and 2693. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but the public record remains open and you can submit testimony for 24 hours. When's the close off, Chris?
Tomorrow at 3:15. Or
320. So if you're a member of the public, yes, if you're a member of the public and would like to submit testimony on any of these bills, 2458, 2507, and 2693, you have till 3:15 to do so tomorrow. If you're watching us, you probably already know how to get on OLS, but if not, and you're on some other strange platform, you can just type into your search engine OLS Oregon Legislature, and that will bring you up. And there is a walkthrough menu, pretty easy for any citizen to submit testimony. With that, colleagues, Madam Chair, Madam Real Chair, Chris, could you give us a picture of the next meeting, when we're anticipating, if any? And then I will turn it over to Madam Chair to close.
Mr. Chair, Chris, the next meeting we have scheduled is Monday the 19th, and right now the agenda is a single bill, Senate Bill 464, and it's a public hearing and possible work session.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Senator Boquist, for doing a spectacular job running this hearing, these hearings today. And I think that completes our business for the day, so we are adjourned.